And it's coffee time. Coffee with the Radio Ranch Wranglers here on the Scriptures for America Worldwide Broadcasting Network. We welcome you folks out there. We thank you for being with us this morning. We're coming to you live this morning, May 17th, 2025. We'll be right back after this song. Stay tuned, folks.
Go down in such defeat. America, America, the tide is rising fast. Don't you think it's time now to remember your great past? America, America, now the tide can still be turned. Just open up your eyes and see the America. Once God's word was your standard, how gradually you've compromised, how far you finally wandered. For the years of silent apathy, to God we now repent. For the years of work we might have done, that's already now been spent. America, America, the tide is rising fast. Don't you think it's time now to remember your great past? America, America, now the tide can still be turned. Just open up your eyes and see the lesson. Its walls will crumble down. We must awake, we must arise, for its kingdom to secure. We know the battle has been won, yes, the victory is sure. America, America, the tide is rising fast. Now don't you think it's time now to remember your great past? America, America, now the tide can still be turned. Just open up your eyes and see the lessons to be learned. Just open up your eyes and see the lesson to be learned. And see the lesson to be learned. You better just open up your eyes and see the lesson to be learned. You better just open up your eyes and see the lesson.
And we're back, and you're listening to the Scriptures for America Worldwide Broadcasting Network. The program is Coffee with the Radio Ranch Wranglers, and I'll bring the men on the line. Good morning, Tim.
Good morning.
And good morning, Will.
Good morning.
And, Tim, why don't you start us off with a word of prayer this morning?
Our dear Lord and Heavenly Father, we just come before your throne this morning, and, Lord, we just thank you once again that we have another opportunity to serve you. Lord, we just pray that you would take and make it a great day, a great week, and a great year. Lord, we thank you for our lives, our liberty, and our prosperity. Lord, we thank you that you are our God. Lord, we thank you for the miracles that we don't see every day and for the ones that we do. We ask, Lord, that you bless this broadcast, that wherever it goes, it might find willing ears to listen, and that, Lord, we might have words put in our mouth by you that would be beneficial and helpful. And Lord, that we would learn ways to put on the mind of Christ, to think as you would have us to think, that we might see things for what they are and do things as they ought to be done. Lord, we ask that you bless our families, our friends, our country, and our people, Lord. We just thank you for the opportunity to serve you. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Thank you, Tim. Well, there is definitely a lot to talk about this morning. I wanted to start off with just kind of some world news. One of the things that caught my attention, and I don't know, it's interesting, is the headline was Russia warns Israel over Ukrainian missiles. And apparently this last week, Israel had talked about giving some of their Patriot missile systems Ukraine. I don't know if they're, I'm for sure that they're selling them. It's probably stuff that they actually originally got from us at some point in time. But saber rattling over there is definitely interesting. What's your men's take on that?
I like the fact that they're no good over there anymore, and so they send them to, according to their anonymous sources. It's like, well, we're not using, they were retired, so they ship them off to Kiev or off to the Ukraine. You know, it's like, okay, I don't. How come they didn't just return them? I mean, I guess it's kind of.
Well, I know a week or so ago, it came out that the White House said they weren't going to send any more military aid to the Ukraine because they want this thing to wind down. I think it's kind of funny, as kind of a snub in their nose, Israel is to the White House, saying, well, you may not supply them, but we're just going to use your weapons that you gave us to supply them to keep this thing going. That's what it kind of looks like to me. It's kind of a backdoor way to, to keep it keep it hot over there.
Well, and I think that's exactly what's taking place. I think that it's something, it's like you're continuing to throw gasoline on a fire and keep it burning, keep throwing fuel on it. And they want those tensions to continue to rage between Ukraine and Russia. Russia, I mean, they're not a force to be reckoned with. I mean, they are very possible. I mean, I think when they're serious, I don't think that they like Israel a whole lot already. And this is just something that, poking the dog a little bit.
I think geopolitically there's a lot moving here because, like we were just saying, the White House said we're not going to supply any more weapons to the Ukraine, and then Israel supplies our weapons to the Ukraine. And this is just coming on the heels of, a lot of talk of really strained relations right now between Trump and Netanyahu and the United States and Israel, that there's a lot of saber rattling, like you said, Jason, of is the White House going to continue to supply aid to Israel? There's obvious now that the White House is coming out and not being very supportive of Israel and their continued incursion into Gaza. Netanyahu this week said that they're going to go full force into Gaza and just destroy everything in sight. And this is not with the blessing of the White House. Trump has been very vocal of speaking against this. And I don't know if y'all have an opinion on that, but it kind of seems like the White House is pumping the brakes on their support for Israel. And in turn, Israel is trying to throw a monkey wrench in the Russian Ukraine war. I don't know. It just seems like a lot of different pieces are moving against each other. What's y'all's thoughts on that?
And that's exactly my thoughts on it. I mean, I see that we are basically, I think that Trump getting away from Netanyahu and trying to separate himself from that, pumping the brakes on the war in Ukraine with Russia, and Israel go ahead and throwing resources at that, basically funding the war with equipment and money that they've gotten through us, from us, through foreign aid, It's, yeah, interesting.
Well, and when you look at the Syria and Iran connections there, I mean, Kiev, West Jerusalem's just kind of been, they only wanted humanitarian aid to Kiev, and suddenly they made this major weapons donation, and I think it's just like what we were alluding to there is the fact that it's another way to put our feet to the fire. Israel's doing that because it's like, well, hey, yeah, we're giving them this, but they gave it to us, you know. So, I mean, the U.S. did. So it's kind of like they want to stir that pot and heat that back up over there. And it's like, well, you know, I guess I evidently when you give them that, it's theirs. They donated it to them. It wasn't us.
So, well, and I don't know if they donate anything for free either, because, I mean, you look at this, it's like Ukraine, they've also turned around and sold a lot of the stuff that that we have given them in the past, too. So you just wonder how much of this stuff, you know, this military equipment stuff, it's like they just pass it around. And you're talking about like multi-millions and millions and millions, if not billions of dollars worth of equipment and missile systems and tanks and you know, weapons of mass destruction and stuff that's just handed around like crazy. I mean, we gave this to Ukraine, but it's in terrorist hands. We gave this to Israel, and it sold from them to somebody else to ends up in Ukraine. I mean, it's just it's kind of crazy. It's like, how much of this stuff really goes on that we don't know about?
You know, everybody that's in this conversation right now, we all we are gun owners. That is passions for all of us, and I know a lot of folks are listening to the same thing. And we know guns travel. You know, just think about the gun shows, and gun shops, and guns travel in this country. And you never really know where your guns come in from and who's owned it before. And I'm thinking about surplus weapons, and that's always been kind of an allure of going to a gun show and finding a surplus weapon and, you know, imagining, I wonder who carried this and what field of battle it saw and all of that. Well, that's the legitimate stuff that's getting surplus and put on the, you know, the civilian retail market. If those guns travel, imagine how the weapons travel on the black market that we don't know anything about. And it's not just rifles we're talking about. It's not surplus ammunition we're talking about. We're talking about like shoulder fired Stinger missiles that are getting traded around. And that's a scary thought, because even though, you know, you think it's being accounted for, it's an old story, but I'll go back to the 180,000 rounds that were intercepted in Colorado. I'm sure those were accounted for somewhere on a sheet of paper, or, you know, inside a computer somewhere, but they sure weren't where they were supposed to be, were they? And I think the same thing applies for all these weapons that are getting donated or loaned or whatever you want to call it. And we really don't know where they go once they leave our hands.
Well, and you just think about how crazy that is, because you try to, let's say, for instance, you get online and you want to buy a 22 or a shotgun, and you order it in from gun broker or something like that, there has just got to be a change, you know. How crazy that is, because you try to, let's say, for instance, you get online and you want to buy a 22 or a shotgun, and you order it in from gun broker or something like that, there has just got to be a change.
You know, you got to be 18 in some states, 21 in other states to be able to go out and buy ammunition or to buy a long gun or a handgun. Yet we're sending M4 platforms to the Ukraine for 13-year-old girls to go out on the battlefield and get killed. And they don't have a problem with that. But they don't want the same. They don't want that ability here in the United States. And you want to talk about hypocrisy? I mean, what's the difference, right? They care. They want you to believe that they care about the children. You know, for goodness sakes, think about the kids. You know, take the guns out of the homes and hands of legal gun owners, because we want to prevent these mass killing situations in the schools and that sort of stuff. But they're shipping them by the crate full to the Ukraine for kids to kill other kids on the battlefield. I wonder why those kids are different than our kids.
Yeah, that's a good point. Very good point.
And that's, I was going to say, and the question we really got to ask is who's buying, you know, and that's kind of what we're talking about, obviously, but it's like, Yeah, there's no requirement of any type of anything for them. They just sell them and or give them or whatever they do with them. And I mean we've seen that in places like Afghanistan and different things like that. You know, they would find a cache of weapons, and it was like, wait a minute, these aren't supposed to be here. You know, so
yeah,
there's no accountability.
I guess they only want universal background checks for us.
Yeah, pretty much.
It doesn't apply everywhere else.
Yeah. That's what I was. So when if we send weapons, Stinger missiles over to Israel, do we get to do a background check to make sure that they're going to the right place and the right person, and that they're going to be used for a legitimate cause? I mean, hello. I mean, yeah. Just.
Yeah. Yeah.
Insanity.
Whatever. When those make their way to, like, Jalisco, Mexico, to the cartels, I wonder if they're having to fill out a 4473 declaring that they're not an illegal drug user.
Yeah, there was a years ago, there was a movie that came out. It was Lord of War, and it was with Nicolas Cage. Mm-hmm. And it talked about, and I thought it was, you know, kind of crazy, but it was a movie me and Pastor Peters went and saw it together, and we really enjoyed parts of it. I'm not saying that I'd recommend it for, you know, as a good movie, but it was definitely interesting. And we talked to quite a few different people, and they said that that was basically exactly how it was. This international gun trade is just not what you think of. You think of it as being something that's very protected and very private. And, you know, is what it boils down to is, you know, anybody can get anything. And, you know, any country can get anything they want. Is all it takes is dollars.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing what you can get done. I always liked that quote out of one movie, and it said, "It's amazing what you can get done if you say I don't care how much it costs and you mean it."
You know, so. That's right.
People are like, well. You know, if you've got to ask how much it's cost, you don't want that done that bad. If you say, do that, and I don't care what it costs, and you mean it, well, I didn't think that happened. So, and that seems to be the way they work. But, yeah.
Well, and on the topic of, you know, Israel, I seen a couple different headlines, and I'm not sure, maybe I just don't understand this right, but it said recognizing Palestine could be one of Trump's most pro-Israel moves yet. It could help stabilize the Middle East and ultimately serve in the interest of the Jewish state. I don't understand exactly what they're talking about. Somebody's going to have to enlighten me a little bit on that. I've seen a lot of stuff. It just doesn't make sense, the wording on it, because I know that Israel right now, they hate the thought of it. They can't stand it. And you know, I'm not sure that the United States, you know, actually even has the authority to say, okay, over here in Palestine, you guys can be considered a state now. I mean, it's it just seems kind of weird.
The move, as I understand, go ahead, Tim, please.
Well, I think what we're seeing there is the fact that basically is the thought that it would define borders. I mean, basically, when you get right down to it and you think about the Israelis' modus of operation, why they think that the whole world's theirs. I mean, basically, if they could get there out for land grabs, for property grabs, for everything else, they're never happy with what they have. Not that what they have wasn't stolen as well, in my opinion. But they... By recognizing that, the thought is that you would define, hey, that's not yours, you know, and like it's going to matter to them anyways, you know what I mean? But, and I guess I'm under this illusion that I seem to remember there being some recognition of the Palestinian state anyways in the past, but maybe that wasn't us or I don't
that
know.
That was the Abraham Accords, Tim.
Yeah.
There was some recognition of a government, but I think you're right. I think what this is the Trump administration, like that whole West Bank area and all of that, I think they're going to say, as far as the United States is concerned, there is a clear defined border, and Israel The state of Israel has no business being across those borders. What I have heard is, the United States is the biggest, supporter, enabler, whatever you want to say, of the state of Israel. And I think what their terms are going to be is, this is what we recognize as the border to Palestine. And, Israel, you have to recognize it as well. Whether that happens or not, I don't know. But I know, as far as, if that happens and the Trump administration starts defining some borders as far as the United States recognizes, where that will potentially be a pro-Israel move, and I don't think that's the intention, but I think that they would garner a lot of support from the people that are kind of enemies of the White House right now, your Germany, your UK, some of those European countries, because they'll be against that. They're going to be against the United States recognizing those Palestinian borders, while the majority of the Middle East would be for that. And I think it just is the potential for more conflict there. I think what we're seeing, and maybe I'm reading way too much into this, and maybe this is a deeper conversation than we should be having, but I think we're seeing the realigning of U.S. support for the Israelis. I think you're seeing, what we were just talking about with those Patriot missiles. I think that was an intentional move by Israel to thumb its nose at the United States. They're trying to throw a monkey wrench into a peace talks between Russia and Ukraine. I think the United States is saying, we're gonna redefine the borders of Palestine, which is a thumbing in the nose to Israel. They're cutting off the financial support to Israel, and I think what we're seeing is the realigning of those nations that are supporting Israel. And I see the United States making moves as it stands right now, and y'all can tell me where I'm wrong, but I see the United States making moves where we're building partnerships internationally with people who are not very friendly to Israel. And I think the United States is starting to look more and more like that, where we're not very friendly to Israel. So I'd like to hear y'all's opinion on it. I mean, I think all of that's positive, but I may be misguided on that. Are y'all seeing something different or the same, or how does it look to y'all?
I'm seeing kind of the same thing is what I'm seeing. I just don't understand how it's going to play out. I mean, it's just complicated. I think that you're right. As far as I'm just not sure. It's like, I mean, they keep saying that that's a pro-Israel move, and it's like, is that a pro-Israel move, or is that it's almost like that's a pro-Hamas deal, because, but I'm not sure. It just is weird.
What's your thought? I don't think it's intentionally pro-Israel from the United
States. I don't think it is either, exactly. And
I think what we're looking for there is peaceful mitigation in those areas. They want to, obviously you can't make all the people happy all the time. I mean, that's not possible. And you've got all these, these claims, these anger issues, retaliatory ambitions, they date. You can't make all the people happy all the time. I mean, that's not possible. And you've got all these, these claims, these anger issues, retaliatory ambitions, they date back hundreds of years, if not more. But what I think their thought is that they want to mollify the area over there. You've got some major powers playing. You've got Russia, you've got Iran, you've got Syria, and there's this alignment, and they're trying to mitigate that into a more of a level playing field. And by doing that, the downside of it is recognition of that area is going to result in enforcement for mitigation. So, you're looking at the possibility there but it's not a lot different from our point of view. You give it all to Israel, or you spread it around and try to smooth things out. Now, it's a case where we've just seen so much shakeup all the time, and there's no defined border over there. They just think that they can go take whatever they want, and I'm speaking.
Well, that's what they do. They're Jews. They always want to take a little bit more.
It's all ours.
How much do they need? Just a little bit more.
Something interesting to me on that. Something interesting to me that, you know, you Jason, you mentioned it, you know, that it doesn't appear that Russia is really friendly with the Jewish state over there. You know, they're not supporters. If you read into it, they've been very critical of Zionism and especially international banking. You know, it's interesting to me, if you look into it, Russia doesn't have a central bank like a lot of the European nations, you know, that's controlled by the Jews. And it sure seems like the United States is aligning up more with Putin and the Russian cause when it comes to this Ukrainian war. And if you see how the chess pieces are lining up on the board, it looks like you have the Jews that are lining up with like a Ukraine, right? They're trying to keep that going. Well, that would make sense because that's a Jewish-led government there. And then NATO and these European nations that are just warmongers, it seems like you're getting clearly defined groups of people now. And I don't know what that means, and maybe I'm looking into it all wrong, but it seems like to me that it's shaking out where on one side it's the Zionist sympathizers and the Zionists, and on the other side it's the opposite of that. And maybe that's wishful thinking, I don't know, but it seems like there's a realigning of those people, of those nations that are in love with Israel. And I don't know. Like I said, maybe that's wishful thinking.
Well, there's definitely a lot of puppets and a lot of, what do you want to call it, mud in the water. I mean, it's tough over there to figure it all out. I will say, you know, it's pretty much my idea that Israel's a terrorist country and has been for a long time. I think that, and they continue to stomp in the face of a lot of the things that go on over there just in order to gain more landmass, more control. And I think you're right. Basically, we know that they don't really care who's in power as long as they run the money systems. So, because that's the ultimate control and the ultimate power. So when we see those kind of things, I don't know if it's much of a head scratch. I mean, the details are maybe a little unclear, but the result or the end game is not. That's what they want. They want it all.
Well, and I just don't think that there's any way that you can deal with them and have peace. I mean, I think it's I think that they are just one of those people that they're gonna cause strife wherever they do. I mean, you look at how many different countries that they've been kicked out of throughout history. There's a reason that happened. You know, people got tired of their crap, is what it boils down to. It follows them. And you know, it's they are just a warring people. No matter what you do, I mean, you look at what's happening right now. Right now, that they've got these hostage release negotiations that are taking place right now to release all of their hostages that are being held by the military groups over there. And but at the same time, they're turning around talking. Netanyahu's like, well, we're going to go ahead and continue just to stomp them into the ground. It doesn't matter if they release our hostages or not. I mean, it's you look at the stuff that they do. It's like, I mean, there is no peace with them. That's the way that I see it.
Yep. I agree.
Esau lives by the sword, right? We're told that in Genesis.
Exactly. And that
no matter where they go, they foment war, and they thrive off of the unrest of whatever nation they're in. I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, they're just vampires that are living off the blood of the innocents. No matter where they go, they foment war to have blood spilled, not their blood, but the blood of innocents, and they do that. Tim was alluding to it, you know, through their banking of they don't have to be the soldiers on the field. As long as they're profiting from it and profiting from that war, that is how they survive. And that's how they survive for centuries. And whatever, Kabbalist, Talmudic blood ritual that they live off of. That is, they thrive off of the power of spilt blood of the innocent, and they profit from the money that these wars make. And I think that's, no matter where they are, that is their MO. And truly, like I said, Esau, it was said that he would live by the sword all of his days. And I don't think anything has changed from then until now.
No, it's in their DNA, and it was back then, and it still is today.
Pastor used to say that's that hidden Pam. Let's you and him fight, you know. So
I won't
loan you the money to do it.
That's right.
So
with interest. Yeah.
Yeah, with interest.
All right, well, moving on. Chinese surveillance devices capable of causing mass blackouts found in green energy inverters. Either of you men want to start off with that? I was looking at this, and I didn't realize how many of this, you know, green energy is supposed to be good, right? It's supposed to be green. It's supposed to make you happy. And green energy ain't that green sometimes, but I didn't realize that all the battery packs were pretty much predominantly came from China. And it says this one, I'll just read part of this article because I think that it says it pretty darn well. It says surveillance tech found in power inverters from China used in green energy infrastructure could trigger catastrophic widespread blackouts, sources told Reuters. The rogue communications devices discovered inside inverters heavily relied on in the solar panel and wind farm industries have prompted concerns among U.S. Energy Department officials. Reuters wrote Wednesday, adding that inverters are also used in batteries, heat pumps, electric vehicle chargers. Over the past 9 months, undocumented communications devices, including cellular radios, have also been found in some batteries from multiple Chinese suppliers by U.S. experts. The anonymous source also warned that using rogue communications devices to skirt firewalls and switch off inverters remotely or change their settings could destabilize power grids, damaging energy infrastructure, and trigger widespread blackouts. Well, that doesn't sound like that. It'd be very good.
Yeah, Iberian Peninsula power outage, anyone? I mean, do we remember
when
that?
Yeah, right.
Doesn't that sound like maybe that was the test? You know,
it might have been a good trial run, huh? Because if you remember on that, you know, with Spain, Portugal, and part of France, that was all solar and wind, green energy, and inexplicably, it just shut off, right? And that sure seems like a likely scenario to me, but.
Well, and one of the quotes in that article were that effectively means there's a built-in way to physically destroy the grid, or you know, and stop it from working. And basically, they just went—I don't remember the time frame, but it was just a few days or weeks before that all happened that they had gone to this total green energy source. And we know that just a huge percentage of all that stuff comes from where? China. You know, that's where it's manufactured, those inverters and everything. So I would say I think that it's not a leap to think that those two things are related, you know. So.
No, and I mean, I think what you think about that is just an act of warfare. I mean, what a great MO of the enemy is to go ahead and have that stuff planted ahead of time where it's like, okay, you do go to war with the country and, all right, lights out, click, boom. You flip a switch or dial a cell phone number and all of a sudden, boom, their power's out. That is, that's huge. That, that shuts down a lot of communications. That shuts down a lot of different stuff. I mean, you talk about power. I mean, and they're putting these solar farms in all over where we're at. And just about everywhere I go, I see these wind turbines that are ineffective, don't work, cost a boatload of money. And half the time you see them and half of them aren't working anyway.
educate me on this. You guys are smarter on this than I am. On the solar farms, you know, these massive solar farms that are all, and I've been all across the country, and I'm amazed. They're here in Texas. They're in Colorado. I was up in Massachusetts and Vermont. They're there. They're everywhere. The same thing with these wind farms. Those are tied into the grid, right?
Yes. The way that I understand it, they are. Yeah. Tim, you know more about that.
They're tied in. Yes, they are. And they call it passive, but it's not passive when they're actually generating, because it's a live connection. You can't store that energy. You either have to use it or it's goes to waste. So, yeah.
So it's my thinking on that is if these are tied into the grids themselves all across the country, and like I said, I know they're here in the Texas grid, they're in the West Coast grid, they're in the East Coast grid, would it be possible to sabotage the entire grid using this green energy and what the Chinese have done? You know, could they send, you know, an overload or whatever? That was my thinking when I read this, is we're talking about green energy, but that green energy is tied into the actual grid itself. And if they're able to interrupt the wind power and the solar power that's tying into the grid, could that sabotage the entire grid itself? And I don't have an answer to that, Tim. I mean, you tell me.
Oh, it absolutely can, because it's just a simple numbers game. I mean, the higher percentage of green, quote unquote, energy that you're using becomes part of the demand load, you know. And if you shut the inverters off, the thing is, you know, some of that stuff is air gapped or whatever, but they're talking about using cellular radio connections and different things like that, or in those inverters, so it doesn't have, it's not air gap, because all they have to do is communicate with it wirelessly. And in that case, I don't know what the distance is for the wireless communication on it, but when they start shutting those inverters down, you're effectively reducing your production supply. And grids do what's called cascade failure. If you don't have enough energy in that grid to support the load, once the demand exceeds the production capability, the grid protects itself and shuts off, you know. So it's just a cascade failure. All you have to do is pull enough supply out of the system to no longer be able to carry it, and the grid's going to shut down, and it won't restart until it's restarted. And in this particular case, if they're shutting down the inverters, in the case of, go back to the Iberian Peninsula again, they took perfectly good production plants offline, coal, nuclear, different things like that, and took them offline and got rid of them. So they had no way to increase production to meet demand, and the system couldn't start. Demand has to be less than or equal to production, or you've got a problem. I mean, you're going to start having brownouts, you're going to start having blackouts, and you're not going to have very many of those before the system, and this is another issue, in my opinion, with going to this fully electronic, remote-controlled model that they want to use. They talk about our archaic power grid. Well, the enemy would like us to go to fully automated, remote-controlled power grids, because they can shut them off this way. I mean, this is a perfect example of it. You know, back in the old days, you had to send somebody, had to send a lineman out there or a yardman, and they had to go out and disconnect the power, you know, or reset the transformer or whatever sequence of events was there. Now you simply push a button or hit the enter key, and you can turn it on, you can shut it off. So it's, you know, yes, it can be damaged. In this country currently, the percentage of green power we're using is not humongous, so we're not dealing with as much possibility of that, but you definitely can. It's a brute force attack. You can definitely end up with a cascade failure that will put that power grid down, you know. So, and I think the more that we go to this, the more of a risk there is involved.
Well, and one other thing to think about, too. Thanks, Tim, for that. I appreciate that. That was a lot better explanation than you were going to get from me. But when we were talking about this, I was thinking, one of the thoughts that popped into my head was, it wasn't that long ago we covered some stories on these pagers and cell phones and stuff over there in Israel that were used as explosive devices. And people were getting blowed up all over the place. And my thinking is well, if they can do it with a pager or a radio like that, they can do incorporate the same technology. And what if they had all those inverters rigged with explosives, or the battery is the explosive? And, you know, I talked in here about these charging stations for these cars. Well, you think about how many electric cars there is across this United States, and if they can ignite a those car bombs, those cars, when those cars go start on fire, it is, and they start blowing up, it is insane. I mean, it sounds like World War III started in your backyard. I've seen some videos of them. The last couple that I've seen were up in Canada, and it was just unbelievable. The explosions, it's like, you see one of those electric cars on fire, you want to get away from it as far as you can. They're dangerous. But if you had, you talk about, a minefield across the United States, if every one of those car chargers could be turned into a weapon, it would be, interesting.
I have nothing to base. This is all just hypothetical because I hadn't thought about it until you started talking, Jason. I'm assuming that these electric cars, no matter what the brand, that they have some sort of inverter system as well, right? Because it's battery powered. Obviously, there has to be an inverter to make those cars go as far as changing over the electricity. What if those inverters are made in China too?
They are.
I'm sure. And if they're doing it in the power system, why would we be so foolish to believe they're not doing it in those same inverters
that are rolling around
in every electric car in this country or across the world? And when you said landmine is what made me think about it, what you really have there is, I don't know how many electric cars there are, a couple hundred thousand. I don't know, maybe more than that. But what I do know is they're rolling incendiary devices that are going to become hazmat scenes. There are no fighting those fires when those cars explode. You just let them burn to the ground. So whether it's in a garage, a parking garage, on the highway, in the parking lot of Walmart or whatever, who's to say that those won't be controlled combustion somewhere?
Well,
I don't know.
We are talking hypothetically, and I don't want to scare people or anything like this, I just want to think about the enemy could do. But, have you watched these videos where they actually, somebody, a hacker, can hack into a car and take control of it and, drive a vehicle? I mean, you think about that. And I know that it's a lot easier on some of these, electric self-driving steering cars and stuff like that. But can you imagine if, you got somebody on the other side of the world that's sitting there in front of a joystick that's driving these cars around, hitting targets, blowing stuff up? I mean, it's wow.
I guess I just put on my conspiracy hat this morning. And while we're sitting here talking, I was just thinking as far as the, can you imagine the chaos if somebody decided today's the day we flip the switch and, every EV across the country just caught on fire? There wouldn't be enough firefighters or firefighting apparatus to put those out.
No.
That would just be chaos.
Garage, every hotel, parking garage, hotel, you name it, would be on fire. There's people that are rural where we are not in town. We're, what they consider outside of town, but there's still people that have electric vehicles out here, and they would, there wouldn't be enough firefighters. There would not be enough to put that out. It'd be crazy.
Well, and we're not really trying to scare anybody. What we're trying to do is raise situational awareness of possibilities, instead of, if something like that happens, instead of standing there with your mouth hanging open going, I can't believe this isn't happening, you've already thought. there's the potential for something like this to happen. Make a plan, have an idea of what you might do in regards to this. I mean, it's like, I think that, you know, I listened to a talk. It's been, 30 years ago now. They were talking about nuclear destruction. Their goal is not to use nukes to destroy the country. They want the means of production. They want, we've seen that in South Africa. We've seen that in all these other places. That's what, you know, they want that infrastructure. The thing about a lot of these things that we're talking about is that yes, there's some damage that would happen through these smaller results, but it's key damage points that will allow infrastructure to remain in place. And, you know, they're not, see mushroom clouds all over the place. And this is my thought, but what you're going to see is it's going to be much more surgical than that. And I think that that's their thought. They're, obviously, God says we win. These things are, God has his plan, and he laughs at theirs. So it's just one of those. But I think that basically what we're seeing here and what we're saying here is it's not that technology is evil, but it can be used for evil purposes by evil people, by ungodly people. And I think that that's what we have to understand. It's like there's issues there that can impact us on a daily basis in a way, in a really bad way. And, you know, I mean, if you want to get into that, you can also look at the fact that a lot of these people have standby generators. Say I'm set, you know, but they've got an auto switch on their generator. When the power goes down, the auto switch works. Well, if the auto switch has got the same built-in features and they're broadcasting their signals, they may not work. They may cause, bad side effects, I guess would be the right word. But, you know, maybe a guy ought to think about a disconnect switch that you go out and actually turn on yourself. I mean, it's inconvenient, but the 7-Eleven mindset does not lead to long-term reliability. Evidently, as we're seeing this and as we're approaching it.
Well, to me, this conversation that we're having, and to me, this is more proof that green energy sucks, and we should be driving diesel vehicles with deleted diffs.
Yeah, exactly.
I agree with that wholeheartedly. Oh, but they're smelly and they're loud
and they work. And think? The Chinese can't shut them down.
What do you think Watkins like?
There you go.
So, I was cruising down the road the other day, and you know it's about 15 miles to the closest decent sized town. And I was thinking the other day on the road there, I was like, you know, if you had to walk this, I mean, some days I have to run to town 2 or 3 times in a day. That's no big deal. You jump in the rig, you fire up, you're there in 15 minutes. Can you imagine walking that? You know, that's an all-dayer. So, yeah.
Well, talking about those deleted def systems, I was talking with somebody the other day that they, in 2015, they bought brand new Duramax diesel, and they had one problem with it within the first 3,000 miles, and it was the DEF system, the EGR system, whatever. I'm not sure exactly what the problem was, and they just had it, and they went ahead and, you know, everybody says, oh, don't delete it until you're out of warranty or this or that. He's like, the only problems that this truck's going to have is the DEF system, so I'm going to go ahead and delete it anyway. Deleted it, and it's got 150,000 miles on it and never had a single issue with it. At the same time, I think it was a brother or a friend of his had bought the exact same truck, same time, and did not delete it, and has had nothing but problems in and out of the shop. And it was everything that it ever went into the shop for was related to that emission system. So it just, I mean,
I'm living proof on that, Jason. My Super Duty, the only problem I ever had was the emission system. And once I've deleted all that junk out, I've had zero issue with that truck. So what you're saying is gospel as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. Well, and I had one deleted the other day, and I could not believe how much stuff came off of that thing. I mean, it looked like the amount of parts that was in the bed of the truck was, I mean, it was like half the engine. I mean, it was just crazy. I'm looking at this thing, and this thing looked like a jet engine sitting in the back there. It was kind of mind-boggling, and it's like, yeah, no wonder. No wonder you take half the parts off of this thing. No wonder it'll make it run right.
You know, and well, I'm sorry, Tim. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead, Will. You're fine.
I was just going to say, you know, this whole California compliant crap with the DEF system and, you know, diesel, you know, gosh, you can't have that, you know, that black smoke coming out. That's just so terrible. So we're going to fix that by superheating ammonia and producing, you know, the ammonia vapor to put out into the environment. How's that any better?
Yeah, I mean, if you go breathe that exhaust in off of a deleted truck versus a non-deleted truck, which one's going to kill you faster? I mean, it's like the insanity of it. And then you take something that, you know, should get 30 miles a gallon, and you choke it down to where it's getting 20 miles a gallon. What's more efficient? I mean, what is actually getting burned up, and what's actually putting more out into the environment?
And I haven't taken
a good indication.
I haven't.
What you got? Go ahead, Will.
No, I haven't taken my conspiracy hat off, and it has nothing to do with the environment. It has everything to do with control. That's all that it was about. It was just, you know, jacking up the prices of trucks so that nobody can afford them, and it's just a tool of control as far as I'm concerned. It has nothing to do with the environment. Those people don't care about the environment no more than they care about us.
Yeah. And one of the other things that I think is another significant aspect of that is if you really want to do a little deep dive down something, take a look at where DEF comes from. They're breeding hogs so that they pee more because all that stuff's that's what it is. It's refined hog urine.
Yeah.
And they put that in there. And, you know, my Bible says that when you go to the bathroom, go it outside the camp, and take a shovel and bury it. And it says, "Don't touch unclean things, and don't do that." I mean, how do you think God feels about you breathing in that? So, you know, there's that.
Yeah.
They desire to make you, you know, unsavory to your God. I mean, that's the way that is, and it's all around us. There's so much of that goes on, but it's just like, wow. It's I think that's another aspect of it too.
I would. That's really interesting to me, Tim, what you just said, because I, like I said, quickly my mind just worked of, you know, one of the things that we say a lot on the show is they want to make us like them, you know, unclean. And I would venture to say the majority of folks that are driving, you know, 3/4 ton and 1 ton diesel pickup trucks probably look more like us. There's probably not a lot of guys named Feinbaum that are driving Super Duty and Duramaxes. But I mean, what better way to make us unclean than to exploit something, you know, like a diesel truck? I hadn't even thought about that before, but man, that's interesting to me.
Well, they sit around and think about it. They got to, or somebody is, you know, because we see these things go on, and it's like, wow, that's just too weird.
Yeah, there was how did we get on the topic of diesel trucks? I don't know, but I always like talking about diesel trucks, so that's fine with me. Man, I'll tell you what, we got a bunch of snowflakes and people that are just melting over these South Africaners that arrived coming to refugees coming to America, came to America. We've got some. We've had our first, 45 of them that got into the United States this last week, and more to come. yeah, to that, to them, I say welcome, welcome. I mean, this is the first time that I didn't think that I was ever going to be welcoming in refugees, but I do to this group of people, that's for sure. And happy to have them. I mean, there's a difference in quality of people and people that are actually coming here to work and to want to get jobs and are, you know, fleeing a situation where they might be killed. They're living their life in fear. It's bad over there. We'll talk about that here in a little bit. But I have seen a bunch of videos and a bunch of stuff that people are posting, and it's amazing how racist some of these people are towards white people. That's what I've noticed. They were fine with the illegal immigrants coming in illegally. They were fine with the Haitians. They were fine with the Venezuelans. They were fine with, you know, as long as they were of a different color, they were fine and happy to have them here. But you try to bring some white people in here, boy, they hated it.
Yeah. It's amazing that 50 white South Africans can create such a stir when 3 to 4 million brown people, you know, that was hidden. You know, that you didn't hear anything about it. Those numbers were inflated. No, there's not that many people, but 50 white South Africans, that's the end of the world. To some people, you know, and you look at this as far as I'm with you, Jason, like I don't rejoice in a lot of immigration, period. But if you're looking at this, first off, let's look at it. They're really refugees. These are legitimate, you know, by definition, these are refugees that are in many instances fleeing for their life. And if they're not fleeing from their life, they're certainly fleeing from an oppressive government that doesn't have the best interests of this group of people at heart. So legitimately, they're refugees. Secondly, and this is something that's important for me as an individual, I think you guys would share this, and that is these are not aliens to us. These are not strangers. They may have a different culture, and they may sound a little differently than us, but they are of the founding stock of our own nation. These people very much resemble us and who we are, and so they're not aliens coming into this country. They are our cousins. You know, they are a part of our kindred family. And thirdly, they're not mooches. They're not slugs. They're not vampires. They're not coming here to you know, eat our nation out from within. They're coming here to contribute. And I don't know why anyone would be opposed to that. You know, these are contributors. They're not consumers. And for goodness sakes, that's what we need more of, including of our own people.
Well, and that's what I seen, and people were complaining about it. I put a couple comments on it and got nothing but a bunch of hate back, but which I'm kind of used to. But I said, you know, these are people that will contribute to society. You know, mm-hmm. they're not cancer. They're not just takers. They're not parasites. These are people that are willing to work, that want to work, to want to get jobs, that, you know, you've seen what they've built over there. And like you said, they are, there are brothers and sisters and cousins in, you know, and they have a lot of the same heritage that we do. I mean, they're predominantly Dutch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and it's interesting. Yesterday, Deputy President Paul Mashatile, or however you say his last name, they came out and they were like urging the white farmers not to relocate to the USA.
Mm-hmm. Which, they don't want to starve. The white farmers over there would leave. All the black people would die of starvation.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. So, you know, But, you know, we're seeing that going, well, we want to work with you. We want to work with you. We'll protect you. We'll, and it's like, wow. And ask yourself how they got to that situation. So,
you know, not only is it, not only is it would they starve, but kind of going back to what we were talking about with the energy grid, anecdotally, you know, they are already having load shedding and that stuff going on all across South Africa because of the incompetence of the rule that, you know, 90% of whatever government entity has to be made up of black Africans. So, you know, right. Only 10% of the jobs can be made up of someone else, whether they're Indians or whites or whatever. And so they never had a problem with load shedding when it was under white rule and the white government in South Africa. But now for the last 30 years, they can't keep the lights on. And anecdotally, what I've read is the only reason the lights are on 12 hours a day is because those are the shifts where the white people are working. And so
right.
They would be without food, and potentially that country would fall into absolute civil war if all of the Afrikaners just pulled up stakes and left. That's my opinion. I think the only thing that's holding that together loosely as a country is there is still a remnant of the original settlers that are there making things work, and sooner or later those. That will stop one way or the other, and I'm sorry, I'll be quiet on that. But I just I welcome these people with open arms personally. That's all I can say to that.
Well yeah, and that Mashatile or whatever, and one of the other guys there, Ramaphosa over there, he said, "quote They are not being hounded. They are being treated. Mm-hmm. They are not being treated badly." They are leaving ostensibly because they don't want to embrace the changes that are taking place in our country in accordance with our constitution. Well, and with that kind of reverse discrimination, why would you want to be? And, Trump stated here a while back, he said they're being brutally killed and having their land confiscated in South Africa. So evidently the people that are leaving, that's not what they're saying. They're not saying they're not being hounded or they're not being treated badly or their land's not being stolen. It's kind of like, oh my. Mm-hmm. So the people who write history are the victors, not the people who are being abused. You know, and it's like they're talking about the fact that the guys that are over there yet are talking about, well, our rural roads aren't very good. You know, they want us to work with them to deal with that. A rural safety issue. Yeah, they're being killed. It's like you got people breaking in and killing your wife and your kids and your livestock and everything else. So that sounds like you're being hounded and treated badly to me. I mean, when people kill you, that's definitely being treated badly. So it's kind of one of those. It's not funny. It's just talking heads. So it's like, well, we want you to stay here so we can abuse you some more. And Jason's absolutely right. If they all leave, what are we going to eat? So
it's I don't know. It is interesting, and it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. That's for sure.
Yes, I think the upside of this is there. You know, what was hidden is now coming to the light. That there's with the left's response to these 45 or 49 South Africans. There's no hiding. They just hate white people. The right. Left just hates white people. They're losing their minds over a handful of white folks coming into the country. And so I think that in itself is a good thing of they're not trying to hide it anymore. They're just coming out and saying what they really believe. And that is they don't want any more white people coming to this country. They want the opposite of that. So I think that's a good thing. I think that's a good thing for our people. I know that sounds like, how could that be a good thing? But I think it's a good thing for our people. Hopefully it wakes more people up to realize that they just hate you because of what you are.
Exactly. And this week I was talking with my wife, and she was telling me she'd run across a whole bunch of stuff, and it was kind of funny because it was all these people that if Trump got in, they were leaving the country, and they were moving here, and they were moving there. And it was them that were – it was those kind of people that were making these videos, and they're like – well, we moved over here, and there's all these Muslims, and these Muslims, they want to kill homosexuals. and they don't like us. And, you know, they're crying their crocodile tears about some of the places that they moved to, thinking that, oh, everything was going to be so much better and things were going to be different. And, you know, they were trying to make a statement, and, you know, picked up and moved away from this country to another country. And I don't care where they went, they're realizing that, hey, we had it pretty darn good. We lived in a pretty darn good place, and things were pretty okay back the way that we had them.
Mm-hmm. Well, and there was one major TV personality who went over there to Ireland, and, you know, I don't know. I haven't really looked into it because I personally don't care. But, you know, they're talking about deporting her.
Well, we don't want her back. That's fine. Just keep them.
Yeah. So, it's like, yeah, you didn't like what you had, so now you got nothing.
Right.
And we don't want her back. So.
Well, and I've seen that they're going to start deporting these, Trende Aragua? I don't know. Horrible at pronunciation, but a federal judge in Pennsylvania on Tuesday became the first to say that Trump could invoke the Alien Enemies Act to deport these Trende Aragua gang members. And I didn't even know, is the Alien Enemies Act, is that something new, or is that something that's been on the books for a while?
1798.
Yeah, that's oh, okay.
1798. That's how long, yeah. Some of that dealt with, and Tim, you may know more than me, but I think a lot of that dealt with post-Revolutionary War. We still had some Germans, some Hessians that fought on behalf of the British, and maybe some British as well that were still loyal to the crown. And I think this was a way to kick them back across the sea, and they were, you know, enemies of the government. So it has been used, though. I think it was used during World War II, wasn't it, Tim?
Yeah, there was some of that. That was, well, and that they basically used that as part of the, like it or not, but some of the POW effects and things like that, it was like they were Japanese defense or dissent, you know, and they, but yeah, mm-hmm. it was used. It's been used occasionally here and there, but you had Tories and stuff that were, you know, they couldn't be mollified, they wouldn't go along, so basically they were put out, they were excluded and run off. And I think it's interesting, one of the story on that business with that judge ruling on that is, and I don't know the administrative procedure there, but isn't it interesting that it was a judge in Pennsylvania? And, you know, mm-hmm. if you think of Washington, D.C. as the head of our government, but according to antiquity of our country, Philadelphia was the actual seat of power, which located Pennsylvania. So it's
interesting
to me that we had a Pennsylvania judge rule on that. I every time I see something like that come down out of Pennsylvania, I'm like, that's interesting. But those people, they're not citizens. They do not have, and I know I've said it before, and it probably sound like a broken record, but they do not have the rights that we have. They're not citizens. They don't. There is no responsibility toward them for, basic human rights are simply a moral obligation to our people, in that, you know, we're not going to starve them to death or anything else. But it's like, you know what? You don't want to be here. We don't want you here. Get out. You know, I mean, that's the way it works. So you're not supposed to be here. So this is not your room.
Exactly. Yeah. We've got a caller on the line. We're going to go to the phone lines. Hello, caller.
Are y'all having a two-hour program?
Yep, we are.
Wow. I just wondered if you got a memo from Archaics.
I'm not sure what that memo would be. We're on the air right now. Do you want to call back after we get off the radio?
Well, I mean, not really, but I sent the memo, about a year ago, and I never heard any more about it, and I just was curious as to why. I mean, I left a message.
I'm not sure what the memo was. I don't know who got it or what it was.
It was just a guy done a bunch of research and pretty compelling, really compelling. So, and y'all teach about it through the years. One thing is about the Great Pyramid.
Okay.
And many other things, but very compelling. So I just wondered why it wasn't relayed, or because it, I mean, you have to look into it just a little bit, but you start to piece it together pretty quick. And y'all had already taught. One of his favorite teachers was Ray Capps, I think. Or
okay.
He Raymond Capps, yeah. And but he goes well beyond that. I mean, so much so that you just you almost can't do anything with it because it's so much data. But he does a good job of piecing it together, and you can make up your own mind. He just tries to give the facts, and there's a lot of stuff built into that. I'm not saying that somebody with a bad heart can't do that, but I was hoping to get some confirmation on something, and because I've been looking into it for a long time, I mean, what I can. And this guy, he spent 26 years in Texas Penitentiary, and that's where he learned to do that. He went in there 17 years old, and he, the story, all the stories of what it, in other words, he's up front with everything that I can see. But very compelling, like I said. I mean, just one example of many. He makes sense of the book of Revelation, and he don't teach all the book. He knows, I guess, where he uses data to tell what to relay. And one third of the stars and the sun, the moon is going to be reduced. And the old scripture that says, Satan will be upset, you know, because his time is short. Well, we don't think that there's any way time could really be shortened. But with all his data, it's not hard to be a believer just in that one thing. And, I mean, he has thousands. And he don't charge. It's really free. All you want is free. I mean, if someone thinks it's worth what it costs, then, I mean, I don't think they're looking into it good enough, but it's a lot of data.
Well, I'll have to take a peek at that. I appreciate you sharing that with me.
It's spelled A-R-C-H-A-I-X. And he's got like 900 videos, and he's just recently, he was published while he was in prison, and that rarely ever happens, and he did it, and many other things, and
well, I appreciate you sharing that information with us, and thanks for the call, and you have a good day, and we're going to keep going, but thank you for the call this morning.
Thank you.
And it's as easy as that to call in, 970-224-4203, 970-224-4203. We'll go back to you, Tim.
Well, I do think that those people don't have any, they don't have any rights under that. And I obviously they're saying there's a chance for that judge's ruling was 43 pages long in Pennsylvania. I thought that was interesting, but they have to provide them an opportunity to be heard, which obviously administratively that makes sense. What if they, you don't want to make a mistake and deport someone who's actually a citizen, but once you ascertain that, did the rules change? You know, it's like, nope, they're not. So you know, proof or poof. I mean, it's like proof you can stay, poof you're gone if you don't have it. So
interesting to me, and I just throw this out there that I think there's a little more going on here. And there was, if you remember, very early on, through an executive order, Trump, using the executive power that's given to him in our Constitution, he declared Trinidad Agua and MS-13 as terrorists, right, as enemy combatants. And that gives him some power and leeway to use the Alien Enemies Act, going back to what we were talking about with the Hessian soldiers, you know, that were Germans, that these were enemies of the state. And I'm trying to figure out how this is going to shake out, because what hasn't been addressed in the courts, as I have seen it yet, is really this is an argument and an attack against the president's executive authority, because this argument that's being made, what Tim's talking about with the right of habeas corpus and that sort of thing, this isn't to all of these immigrants writ large. This isn't the Guatemalan that's working at the dairy or the Honduran that's the roofer. This is two specific groups of people, and that's identified members of this criminal street gang, TDA and MS-13, that have been declared terrorists.
Yes.
And I'm trying to figure out how the courts are saying that they are the same as that Guatemalan or the Honduran, because that's not what the executive branch is saying. They're saying that these are enemies of the state, that these are declared terrorists. And I'm waiting for that to come to court myself to see how that gets shaken out, because
if you go, if you're really in, you start defending terrorism in the United States, that would be treason. Correct?
Yep.
I mean,
you would think.
I mean,
you would think.
That's the way that I look at it. Yeah, go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but yeah. That's just
no. I'm glad you did, because to me that is kind of there's a real struggle, a real fight going on here within the branches of our government. You know, it seems that there's a lot of lawfare going on that. Constitutionally, what the president is guaranteed, they don't want him to use that authorized authority. And I think that has to do with the man that's behind the curtain, because they haven't let the president traditionally in the last, I don't know, since Lincoln, exercise that authority unless it's for their benefit. And now you have a president who's using his legitimate constitutional authority, but it doesn't serve the purpose of those people, those puppeteers like Tim was talking. So they're using the court system to say, even though that's what the Constitution says, we're going to prohibit you from doing that. And I find that really interesting, that like we were talking about with the Jewish state over there and these talking heads that are coming out speaking against these South Africans, it seems like if you look hard enough at it, it's more and more of it's coming to light what they who the real enemies are, you know. And we were talking about traitors from within earlier. It seems like that's what this really looks like to me, of you know, when this was used before, it was to the benefit of those people that were pulling the levers and pulling the strings, but this isn't beneficial to them. So now they're saying that it's wrong. I don't know. Maybe that's a too simplified view of it, but I think it's more and more of it's coming to the top and it's coming to light who the enemies really are within maybe our own government. I don't know.
Yeah, well, when you have people like AOC attacking Tom Homan and Kristi Noem, calling them out, saying that if they arrest any more Democrats, we're going to have some real problems. It's like, which Democrats are you talking about? The undocumented ones from south of the border?
Yeah. And what kind of problems?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's like I forgot about AOC, and I couldn't believe that she was still even in office.
Yeah. I promise you both. You know, that made some news about her threat toward Kristi Noem and toward Tom Homan. I promise you both, Tom Homan could care less about AOC. And as far as Kristi Noem goes, you know, there was the story not too long ago of when she shot her bird dog down by the river because it tried to bite one of her granddaughters. I think AOC should probably remember that, too. So.
I don't think Kristi Noem's too scared about her either.
No, I don't think so. But I do think it's interesting, though, you know, of us talking about more and more, it's coming to light that these people are becoming more and more vocal, you know, like the folks that are just hating on these Afrikaners just for the sheer fact that they're white. I think it's interesting that more and more you're hearing this stuff like AOC being vocal that, you know, there's going to be hell to pay or people are going to have problems. Did you guys catch Jim Comey, the former FBI director, and his social media post towards Trump about 86 and 47? Did y'all see that?
Yes, briefly. I did.
Go by, but I didn't. I don't know what it was all about. I seen the 86 and 47. So.
Yeah, supposedly, I mean, I hate to, it's just such a gay thing, really. So here's the social media post, and you'll understand why I say it's gay here in a second. So this former FBI director, Jim Comey, posts a photo on whatever social media platform where he has taken seashells and made out the numbers 8647, 8647. And in this social media post, he talks about while he's walking on the beach, he does this, and I just think, well, that's gay in the first place, but whatever. And I guess this was a subtle threat toward Trump of 86ing,
right,
being associated with, you know, the 47th president, right. So so this grew legs really, really quickly, and there was all kinds of buzz on social media on this. And I checked it before we went on air this morning. I guess Monday, Mr. Comey is going to be interviewed by the Secret Service of about this threat. So I go back to this whole idea of, this was the appointed FBI director who served in that capacity for some time, I think 6, 7, 8 years, something like that. And he's making these threats against the sitting president. And I personally believe, you know, if he's getting brought in to be interviewed by the Secret Service, I'm not holding my breath that anything's going to really happen on this. But I think it shows that the current administration, we know they're arresting judges. We know that that's happened. We know, I don't know. It seems like people are being held to account, and I don't know. Maybe I'm looking
I think
that's a good thing.
If anybody else did that, they'd be investigated by the Secret Service. I mean, you can't do that in the United States and get away with it.
No, you can't.
I mean, and let alone posting it on social media. I mean, I've heard of stuff where people have written stuff like that on a bulletin board and been investigated by the Secret Service. I mean, you know, something where somebody's had to make some phone calls. I'm not even talking about putting it out there in, you know, on the web or anything like that.
Right. Yeah. Well, he was brass and bold enough that he put it out for the world to see. And, like I said, I think it's positive that these people are they're not hiding anymore. They're coming right out and telling you who they are, and I think that's a good thing.
Yes, I think it is a good thing. And I think that another good thing that's happening is right now there is a big sledgehammer that is being brought down on Big Pharma. And I tell you what, that's one thing that I'm really happy for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's been a lot of, man, there's a lot of heat there. So, messing with their power, messing with their money.
That's the belly of the beast, Tim.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, if you understand the numbers off Big Pharma, and I mean, like, it's been said before, but their annual budgets and incomes, exceed a large percentage of nations in the world. I mean, it's not a small thing. So when, you know, you want to talk about going to war with different places and different people, they take these threats or these remedies as that's what they're looking at it as. It's like, oh, you, yeah. So there's, it's a very belly of the beast. Like you said, that's what it is. So, yeah.
Well, and that there's that new executive order, it has the potential of cutting pharmaceutical costs in the United States up to 90%. You bring that down, I mean, that's huge. Now, I'm not saying that I'm a drug advocate by any means. I mean, and I think most people are better off without them. And don't get me wrong. I don't want to be double-minded about that. I mean, there's a lot of natural ways to do things, and I think that, you know, anytime somebody can do something naturally, that is a better way to do it. But, you know, that being said, I know a lot of people that are elderly that are on a blood pressure medication or something like that, and that's their choice, and that's what they wanted to do. And that's it's the costs have been astronomical. You just start taking those costs down on that, that's going to affect the insurance companies. But it's also going to cut back on a lot of these doctors' paychecks. I think that they said that every doctor that in the United States that did not, every doctor that, let's say, put it this way, every doctor that gave COVID vaccines, that was like getting themselves an extra $150,000 a year paycheck. And the ones that refused or did not do that, that was a $150,000 loss for them. And that doesn't account for all the kickbacks and stuff that they got, during that period in time. But you just think about that. It's like, this is serious stuff. I mean, it's, they're making it, well, number one, they're holding people accountable for the vaccines. They're making the information available of the dangers of the vaccines. This is going to be changing. This is going to change a nation. And I think it's very possible people that went by recommendations, doctor recommendations and stuff like this, there's doctors that are changing their recommendations saying, yeah, you know what, I don't think that I would get this because they're being held liable for what they are recommending someone do in a situation where, should I vaccinate my child with these 30 vaccines that are full of heavy metals and monkey's blood?
Yeah.
And, you know, who knows what else is in it? I don't know. I think that there's a lot of exciting stuff that's happening on that as far as the big pharma. And I see big pharma coming down. And we know who's behind big pharma in so many ways. And it's war. So it's going to be very interesting.
Yeah, again,
I got one thing.
Go ahead.
It's the largest banking scam in the country. But go ahead.
Mm-hmm. No, I got one thing just researching this that I came across. Of one other thing that's awesome about this, I think, is it's kind of come to light that, you know, and I'm making these numbers up, you know, what an $80 medication that, you know, it's $80 in England is $1,500 here in the United States.
Right.
Well, obviously that profit is going into the pockets of politicians and doctors and big pharma itself. But some of that is being used for the research and development of new pharmaceuticals. And what this is has the potential to do is to cut those purse strings so that, you know, all of these untested drugs, because, you know, there's a drug for everything, you know, like if your you know, feet fall asleep while you're laying in bed, you know, there's a drug for that. You know, you can get a prescription for that. And so one of the secondary effects of this is you may see the research and development of new pharmaceuticals go away, or at least slow down, you know, that they're not. And also the advertising budget of this, because I know you guys know you can't turn on a television and not get inundated with nothing but just, you know, prescription medication commercials. So I think when you cut the profit of big pharma, you may see the research and development of new drugs slow down. And I think you will see the pushing of these pharmaceuticals go away, too, as far as the advertisement of them.
It's interesting that you say that, because that was one of the things I was going to say, is that they're not really so interested in, research and development of new things as marketing a new line. You know, it's like, is it sellable? Is there profit in it? Then we can market it. Let's get something put together. It doesn't matter whether it works. It doesn't matter whether it's good for you. I was thinking of, you think of some of these drugs like where they use Gila Monster venom. I mean, who thinks that's a good idea? You know, I mean, there's a whole bunch of that kind of stuff.
Reptiles do. Reptilians think that's a good idea, Tim.
Exactly. We see that.
I just wanted to say, I feel like I say this every show, but this is just one more example of RFK Jr. doing what he said he was going to.
Right. Yeah.
And he is just pushing and pushing and pushing. And I heard talk of this week of this is just talking heads that I was listening to on a podcast that said, don't be surprised if you see RFK run for president in 2028. And I would have a hard time maybe not giving him a vote at this point.
Yeah. Yes. It'll be interesting. It'll be really interesting. He said he was going to do it, and I thought, okay, yeah. We've heard that before. This guy is, he's taking action and he's kicking butt, and he doesn't really care who he offends or what anybody else thinks. He's just, guy's got balls. I'll tell you what, I got a lot of respect for the guy.
I truly believe he is called, and he believes he is on a mission from God Almighty.
Yes. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good example of when you become consumed by your convictions and you move forward with it, regardless of it. It's like the chips fall where they may, but that's what my job is. So,
that's right.
You know, we pray for his protection, and I'm very appreciative of the fact that, to some of us, he's not saying much new, but the fact that he's saying it on the venue that he's saying it on is life changing. You know, the food diet, and the fluoride, and all the other things have been, a godsend to hear put out there at that level.
And he's not profiting, Tim. He's not selling a book. He's truly, he is fulfilling those convictions, and I just think that's an awesome thing.
I do too.
Mm-hmm. More and more people in the national limelight that sound and think like us. That's got to be scaring the swamp to death, don't you think?
I do. yes, absolutely. They're
running out of rocks to crawl under.
That's right.
Exactly.
It was easy to manage when we were all right-wing kooks, right? And white nationalists and white supremacists and haters and all of that. Now, more and more, it seems like folks that sound like us and hold our views, they got titles behind their name and they're making policy for the country.
Yes. Yeah. Holocaust deniers, this, that, yeah, whatever you, and NPR, boy, they've been having a heyday with that too. NPR has identified the Trump officials with close ties to anti-Semitic extremists, including a man described by the federal prosecutors as a Nazi sympathizer and a prominent Holocaust denier. The White House did not respond to multiple requests for comments. You're talking about. I mean, it's like...
I think... Yeah, let me tell you this. They didn't reply to NPR and who would, but I think they did give a reply, because those people that are mentioned in that article, there's three or four of them, they're all still in their position.
Yeah.
Nobody was fired. nobody was removed. They're not, the White House isn't succumbing to the pressure of of the left leaning liberal communist media, basically without saying anything, what they're saying is we don't care.
Yeah.
We don't care what you're saying.
Which tells me that they're losing their power. Yeah.
That's exactly right, Jason. They're losing their stronghold. Once you tell somebody, you look somebody in the face and tell them, your opinion doesn't matter to me. What power do they have? You've just told them you can say whatever you want. It doesn't bother me. And I hate to sound so childish on it, but it's sticks and stones. They may break my bones, but your words will never hurt me. That's kind of what's happening here. Is we've talked about the enemy's use of words and what they do to invoke fear and that sort of thing. And I think you have an administration that just doesn't care. They don't care what people are saying about them. They have a mission and they're going to stick to it.
Yeah. Well, why get distracted? If you're on a mission and that's what the enemy is going to do, they're going to distract you and put you in a position where you're going to start defending yourself and explaining yourself. And then you are ineffective.
Yeah, that's right. You have divided attention then.
They're activists or labelers, that has been enough in the past. All you have to do is just have some person label somebody, and then they're consequently discarded or their views become irrelevant simply because someone else labeled them. And we're kind of approaching a point here where you take the best and leave the rest. There's some of those things that are like, no, that's they may have had some bad ideas, but this was a good idea. This goes along with biblical precepts, and they want to label them, and people are going, wait a minute, I'm not just going to throw the baby out with the bathwater just because you hung a label on them, it kind of goes back to, I think biblically we would call it the fruit test, right? Yeah. So what's the fruit?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of exciting stuff going on. I've seen that up in Minnesota, they're getting ready to, they're preparing for basically what for them to burn down the city again. I don't know. That's what happens. I mean, seriously.
Time to trash stuff again. Yeah.
How long has George Floyd been drug free now? What are we going on?
That's funny.
So we got somebody that is, anyway, we know that was a mess and they tried to burn down the city with George Floyd. That turned into Black Lives Matter and everything like that. And I think that these are all other distractions that people are trying to, weapons of the enemy. They love it when they were burning down the streets and stuff. And that's the thing is our people don't do stuff like that. The difference, the cultural difference, I'm not saying that there wasn't white people involved in this. There was a lot of them. They were, anti-Christ, Antifa, this, that, anarchist stuff that were causing havoc just as much as the black people were. But, when we get upset about something like that, we don't go destroy everything on, a complete city block or a city or try to burn down a city.
Our people, those good Midwestern pioneers that rolled into Minnesota and to the frozen tundra there and made something out of nothing, as far as those farmers and, you look at the Twin Cities and what was built there, our people do that.
Yes.
Our people take something and make something out of nothing. And I think what you're talking about, Jason, is just that constant attack through the ages of they want to tear down and burn what we've built. And that's what's happening here again. In this particular story, nothing has happened. What's being alleged is Trump is going to pardon Derek Chauvin, who was the white police officer there in Minneapolis that was convicted of murder of George Floyd. We know that's not what happened, but that's what he was convicted of. And he was also convicted on some federal charges. And what they're saying is Trump could, and this is just so misleading, but, you know, that Trump could pardon him on the federal charges. Well, it doesn't matter if Trump pardoned him on the federal charges, because he was also convicted on some state charges as well. And that's outside of Trump's authority to give him a pardon there. So he's still going to be in a state prison in Minnesota. So it's not like he's going to be set free. But recklessly, you have the governor of Minnesota coming out and making these statements that the state needs to prepare for when Trump pardons this former white police officer because there could be riots. To me, that's kind of the wink and the nod of, hey, get ready.
Right.
For riots.
That's what I saw too. Exactly. It's like, okay, yeah, guys, get ready for this. I wonder if they already put their order in for their pallets of bricks and started placing them.
Right?
Yeah. You know, I mean, because that's what happened.
Yeah.
You know, anonymously, vehicles with no license plates on them delivering bricks downtown Minneapolis, St. Paul, Twin Cities areas. I mean, we had the same thing happen down here in Boulder, Colorado, and Denver, and stuff like that. Just all of a sudden, there's pallets of bricks that just showed up, covered up with tarps, and you can imagine what happened.
Yeah, no doubt. I was trying to locate the quote real fast, and I could probably give you a close rendition of it, but I found it. So remember, Tim Walz was the vice presidential candidate with Kamala Harris. And during that campaign, it came out when they were the media was going after Tim Walz for his response to the riots that happened in the George Floyd deal. His wife, who is a lunatic, apparently, Tim Walz's wife, her quote in talking about the city burning down, she said, "I could smell the burning tires, and that was a very real thing. I kept the windows open as long as I could because I felt like that was such a touchstone of what was happening. It was just wonderful."
Oh, jeez. Wow.
So I don't know if you guys have ever been around tires burning. But I've never felt that anything was wonderful about a burning tire. But I specifically wouldn't feel like it was a wonderful thing if rioters were burning down my city and setting tires on fire. I don't think I would keep the window. Well, I may open the windows if I needed to touch off a few rounds, but I don't think I would keep the windows open so that I could enjoy the smell of what was happening. I wouldn't consider it to be a touchstone of my life. And I don't think I would consider it to be wonderful unless you're the enemy and you realize that you have to tear everything down to build it into the image that you want. And so when I saw that news story, I thought about that quote and I thought, well, they're probably hoping and praying to their God that that it burns again because that's what they want. That's what they enjoy.
I agree 100%.
The destroyer. I thought it was. There's a new watchword out. I seen the other day, and I actually just had a chuckle about it. But they're calling it. You know, we have white privilege. You know, they beat that to death. And these were actually black people talking about it. That's where I first heard it on a little podcast thing. But they were talking about black fatigue. we're getting tired of all the, you know, Black Lives Matter and all the BS and everything else, and they're getting fatigued by it, and so is everyone else. It's like they, as a result of all this, black drum beating, why they're calling it black fatigue, and I was like, it's another way for saying what? We're getting tired of this crap, you know? It's like, we're not going to keep putting up with it. And they... Yeah, so I just thought it was interesting. One of those things you might look for that. There's some interesting stuff there in regards to it.
Well, moving on to science and technology, Tim, we were talking right before we came on the air, and I think science and technology would cover suppressors and silencers. Some people call them suppressors. Some people call them silencers. Some people call them cans, but there's a lot of science that goes into one of those. And the way that I just don't understand the science behind being able to turn sound into heat. It's quite remarkable, and I think it's fantastic technology. But I know that there's a lot of moves right now for people that are trying to get them off the NFA list. And to make them, you know, basically they're coming out and their argument is they're not a firearm and they should not be regulated by the ATF and you shouldn't have to pay a $200 tax stamp to have one. And there's a big move on that. And Tim, why don't you fill us in on what has taken place with that?
Well, they've made some really major headway. I mean, SCOTUS has ruled that basically they're not a firearm, that they're not, they shouldn't be regulated in that way. Of course, there's some lower courts. There's a lot of yank and pull back and forth between the lower courts and the upper courts. And you know, that administrative stuff is like who's got the biggest and the most powerful and all that kind of stuff. But one of the things that did just come out recently was the fact, and this was just, I just found this out yesterday, so you know, it's new. It may not all be, I may not be 100% accurate, but the we have one silencer company out there that is basically lobbying to keep the silencers in the NFA. They don't want to be deregulated. They want to continue to do the stamp. They want to continue to do the paperwork and the applications and all of the government regulatory BS that's been going on. And the other companies that are involved are all excited about it. The American Suppressor Association, you know, they're favoring, there's a move out there called the Hearing Protection Act. And basically what that's going to do is make it so they're becoming over-the-counter accessory that you could buy to protect your hearing, to protect your neighbor's hearing. There are countries in the world where actually suppressors are considered, if not mandatory, at least highly desirable for everything from hunting to target shooting so that you don't, you know, have a lot of noise pollution going on. Just side note, it's amazing to me that, man, you know, you run around without any mufflers on your truck or something. We were talking about that earlier, and you start making a bunch of noise in more metropolitan areas, well, you can end up with a noise complaint violation. But, you know, they don't want you to. They don't want you to have they don't want you to have any mufflers for your guns, you know, that'd be so. But
anyway. I'm just going to tell you, it's quite convenient when you go out at night and something's getting into the chicken coop, and you can take care of business without waking the neighbors. I mean, to me, it's just it's common sense. You know, neighbors hear a bunch of shots going on. What's that?
Yeah. Respect for your neighbors.
It is respect for your neighbors because they hear the gunshots. Yeah. They're calling you. They want to make sure everything – they're being good neighbors. Don't get me wrong. They're calling. They want to make sure everything's okay, but they hear, you know, five or six gunshots ring out. They're grabbing their guns. They're calling, hey, what do we need to do? You know, it's which is common courtesy. We got a thing around where I live, and, you know, if – the neighbors hear gunshots at my house, they're calling me or my wife saying, hey, is there get our guns? What do we, you know, how can we help? Same thing goes when I hear gunshots at my neighbor's house. I call them up and I say, everything okay? What can I do? How can I help? It's a little bit different than, you know, living in the city. you know, it's rural America. We have, I mean, out here we've got mountain lions, we've got bears, we've got skunks, we've got coons, we've got raccoons. We've, you know, a lot of different wildlife and stuff, and you never know what's going to happen. Plus, there could be, I mean, we could, I mean, you never know if it's going to be a gang or a thug or a robber or whatever, and you just want to make sure. So it's common courtesy for us around here, and we've got it down pretty good to, you know, keep the lines of communication open. But, I definitely think that, you know, a suppressor does have its place. I used to be one of those guys that's like, why would anybody need one of those? And, you know, after you have one, it's one of those things you really shouldn't just have one. You should have two. But it's
Agreed.
It's a lot of fun, and it makes shooting a lot more enjoyable. But I mean,
yeah.
that's just my 2 cents worth.
go
ahead, Tim.
This company that's doing that, they're basically they've outed them as traitors. You know, the industry has, and of course the common theme or comment now suddenly is the fact that they need Bud Light, which is I thought that was kind of. It's like back to the we're gonna vote with
our dollars,
with our pocketbook. You're done, dude. I mean, so there's definitely some stink and some blood in the water as regards this, and it sounds to me like this thing is moving at record pace too. By the way, I mean it's like daily there are updates and things going on, and. I don't understand if it's just an accessory, why it's a problem. And how it doesn't make a gun any more dangerous or any less dangerous. It has no effect on anything that firearm will do. You know what I'm saying? As far as the only thing it does is muffle the sound. So not the intent.
It's the enemy losing control. It's one less thing they're not controlling. And I think that's what's dangerous to them. It has nothing to do with the device. It has nothing to do with what we consider to be the practicality of the weapon. It has everything to do with if they get this deregulated, what else are they going to get deregulated? And they don't want that cascading effect.
And it's the money. I mean, too.
I think we should deregulate everything.
I mean, there's actually talk about totally disbanding the NFA.
And they should.
Well, yeah.
And they should.
And what are we doing with the fact that, you know, the Second Amendment says shall not be infringed?
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of like...
Shall not means shall not.
Yeah.
I'm all for disbanding the NFA if they take the ATF with them.
Yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah.
I agree. And I think that this, you know, Silencer Shop, was that what... Was that the name?
I think it was Silencer Co.
Or was it Silencer Co?
Silencer Co. Yeah.
Silencer Co.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Silencer Co. I got.
Yeah, and I mean, from what I understand, it's just, you know, it's a money deal for them. I mean, they don't want to miss out on a bunch of money. I mean, that's what they've got a business there. But if this goes through, you could be able to get your suppressors through the mail.
Right. Well, and I heard another, and this is, again, I don't have verification on it, but I heard the fact that they also are the main fingerprint machine.
Because of the kiosks and stuff that they have.
Yeah, they subcontract all those out to everyone. So if that goes
that
away,
would make sense.
Yeah, so
yep.
they're into the regulatory end of things as well. And it would, which, you know, like I say, I don't have independent verification on that, but it wouldn't surprise me at all.
Well, we've got to move on. Let's go to, and we're going to do things a little bit different this week for Prepper Tip of the Week. We've got a special guest that's in the studio with me right now. He came over and been patiently sitting here, and his name is Kenny. Kenny, thanks for being here this morning.
No worries. Happy to be here, and was great listening to all this conversation. Very interesting.
And Kenny, why don't you just go ahead and give them a little bit of a background on you and your survival training and your you were a prepper before preppers were cool.
I'd say I'm possibly the grandfather of prepping, and I've known you since you were like 13 when you took my course with your whole family. And for me, it started all with seeing the news and hurricanes and this and that, and everybody running, nobody knowing what to do, what to have, standing in lines for food, whatever they needed. And it's like, just take a look. Everything you need is right in plain view. It's all around you. It's knowing how to use whatever you pick up to go move forward with. And
that was the name of the course that I took over 31 years ago, was IPV, in plain view.
In plain view. And, you know, I taught, I look at it as children have an imagination, picking up a toy and playing with it. So no matter what you touch or have, you have to look at it for more than just one thing, you know, like, oh, this is a spoon. Yeah, it's a spoon. It's a shovel. It could be used medically for a brace or broken thumb or finger and knowing how to properly put it on. Can definitely be used as a weapon in the right hands. But the whole thing with everything that's happening and going on, the biggest threat to us is an EMP or a CME, you know, coronal mass injection. Everybody's so used to instant gratification. And what I've been doing with people is say, okay, on a Friday, when you get home, you shut off your gas, water, and electric. And you walk around with a notepad and a pencil and write down the exact time you lose your mind because you can't flip on a light switch. You can't turn the faucet on. You can't do anything. You're back in the 1800s. You know, and it's that type of scenario in living, and just do it for 3 days. You can't drive your car, anything, because when the power's down, you lose gas, water, and electric. Do you know how to cook? Do you have your medical supplies on hand if you're on medication and stuff? Get a 90-day supply from your doctor. When you do that, try to keep so much each month of that, because when it's done and gone, it's gone. How do you know if an EMP hits? The person that's standing next to you with the pacemaker is first to go down. It shuts it all off. I asked my mom to ask the surgeon, because my dad was having his replaced, and I said, have they upgraded, and is it EMP proof? And the surgeon says, no, we don't have that technology yet. You know, it's crazy for all the stuff that's out there. But when you're traveling and stuff, always, you know, you see a sign that says, you know, deer crossing or this or that. I make a mental mark in my head. Food. That's the food trail.
Hunting area. Right? Yeah.
Yeah, hunting. Food. And it's, boy, when I get in the survival mode or whatever, it's anything I see or do, it's just such a natural thing for me because of calmness, and you don't panic. You always have to step back, assess the situation that you're in, know where everything is that you've always wanted to use and need, or make, you know, the same mental notes. Hardware store. I'm in a grocery store. Here's where the kitchen aisle is, and knives and things of this nature. So you have defense and protection wherever you're at, even if you are carrying absolutely nothing, but knowing how to use what's on you, whether it's a pen, your belt. I teach people to take whatever shoes they wear in that to remove their laces and put 550 paracord in, and all the things that you can do and make from 550 paracord.
Well, I think those are all good tips, Kenny. I appreciate it. And I hope you can come back and share some more information with us. We ran out of time a little bit, but we'll be back. And I appreciate that and look forward to doing some shows. Kenny's done radio with me for on and off. Well, you did used to do radio with my dad eons ago. And I'm not going to tell you how old Kenny is. He doesn't look his age, and he doesn't act it either, especially when he's around me. But he's been around a long time. We've done a lot of radio programs in the past, and look forward to having you back.
Oh, I'd love to come back and really get into it to open everybody's minds and eyes to what's possible.
And Will and Tim, thank you, men, for being here this morning.
You bet.
And we are out of time. We'll be back tomorrow. Join us for a church by going to www.scriptures4america.com.
www.thepreppingpodcast.org. Thanks again, man. Thanks, folks, for being there. Thanks for listening. Remember that if you're listening to us on Spotify or on Rumble, like, share, subscribe. We appreciate it. God bless.